Hi, if I could take a moment of your time before we start, if you've enjoyed previous episodes or if you enjoy this episode, if you could subscribe on the platform that you listen to, that would be really helpful. It helps us get more guests and push the podcast forward. Thanks.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Car Chat podcast. I'm here today, or Sam's here today. I'm Sam, and Sam.
It's very confusing.
Someone in through glass is here today as well. We're in the room with the lovely curtains.
Beautiful curtains, actually.
For those that are an audio format.
Is there a link to those? Is there a discount code for those curtains?
If I could change them, I would, and if someone wanted them, I would give them to them.
Okay.
But I don't really...
But it's not an endorsement. They're not. You're not promoting these curtains.
These are not Porsche branded.
Okay. Because they're the kind of material that I would put on the seats of my own Porsche, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, you know what?
That's the kind of vibe people are
going after.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all for it.
So I was having a look back. Oh, for the people that have not come across you before,
sure.
Can you give a 2 second, who you are, what you do?
Yeah, hi, Sam, Seen Through Glass, very bad YouTuber, producing videos that are a dodgy ripoff of Top Gear of old. I tend to say it's adventures with cars. I am not a journalist. I do not pretend to be a journalist. I am just out there living my best life and making videos about it.
Do you think that you are straying into journalism, right? Well, wait for it.
Mm.
Because you do in kind of like you have a podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
Behind the Glass. And you cover a lot of news topics.
Yeah, but the point of our podcast is it is pub chat. You know, it spawned because me and this guy Tony is a used car dealer from it's really, I really undersell him when I say that. He's a used car dealer. He's an entrepreneur. He's a business owner, but he sells cars from Kent. We were having these long conversations on the phone and WhatsApp about cars. And we thought, well, let's just record this. So we don't come at it from like a super informed, intellectual, thought-provoking kind of way. It's supposed to be, just chat. And it's the same with my videos. I do review cars. So I can't say like I'm not a journalist. I do review cars. But again, it's more just like general observations or opinions. I'm never there to tell you, oh, it understeers at 30 miles an hour, because I just don't know. I couldn't tell you if it understeers at 30 miles an hour, but what I can tell you is how that car makes me feel. If that means that I am crossing the line or blurring the lines between YouTuber, vlogger, journalist, fine, like, I put my hands up to it, but I definitely don't set out to review product, to be like a journal. You've asked me a really good question that I don't have the answer to.
It's an interesting, because I've been thinking about the same thing recently of like, you know, who am I? The deeper questions.
What
of
are
life.
We doing here?
Oh, what the is the point? You know, all that. But you do go, okay, I do talk about a lot of stuff. I don't know. I have opinions. Mm. Whether they're valid or not, that's for other people to decide. But And then you're like, I think I'm straying a little bit. I interview people about cars and whatnot and all that malarkey. But I don't know. I think I'm a lot further away from that. In my head, anyway.
Is it because we haven't actually formally trained in journalism that we feel like we can't call ourselves journalists? I don't want to call myself a journalist, but is that what it is?
Or also, like, I'm not employed by a publishing house or anything. And that, I think that's an element of it as well. Like, if you were writing for a magazine like Autocar or something, you're like, well, I am a car journalist. Like,
sure.
Because there's a column at the beginning of the magazine that says my name and says journalist.
Okay, but then again, so two questions to throw back at you. What do you call yourself? And then secondly, what if Autocar approached you and said, off the back of the podcast, we'd love you to have a column in the magazine? Would you do that?
Well, I call myself Sam.
What's your profession? Are you a podcaster these days?
I think I'm a podcaster these days. Podcaster, photographer, quasi tiny little influencer possibly in there. I only say that because sometimes people pay me to do things, which is brilliant. Generally, I don't try and mix too much. If I'm getting paid, it's kind of obvious that I'm getting paid. And it's normally, these days for me, it's like photography or it's a mix of the whole blend. But yeah, it's weird. I don't have one thing.
Yeah, you're spread across many things.
Sometimes they get introduced and this does my head in. I wonder if you've had this. And they say, hi, so-and-so. This is Sam. This works very well. Sam... For me, they go, Sam had a blue F40. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure this is relevant to the conversation. And I think that doesn't say, but to me, that's not like, oh, great, cool. That says everything about me and everything I do in my life.
So I am assuming that this is the same for, hi, this is Jennifer Aniston. She was in Friends. Do you not think she goes, oh, can't, like, because...
Yeah, it's worse than that, though.
It's way worse. Like, it's way, way worse. You can't...
It would be like, hi, this is Jennifer Aniston. She
once owned an apartment
something
in Manhattan.
Dress or whatever. Yeah, yeah. No, you're like,
it's really bad. And you say, like, it really doesn't portray who you are. But as a way to, within our sphere and world, where a lot of people are identified by their handles, a video or by a car that they've owned, people... maybe assume incorrectly that the best way to identify you to somebody else is the blue F40.
Yeah.
When you're right, it's actually a ridiculous way to explain who or what you are. And quite...
Because you get really weird response. No, you get quite... If you imagine what's a response. So someone, let's say, someone introduces me like that and I'm like, yeah, I mean, okay, cool. And then the other person is like, if there's kind of normal, they're also like, so?
Yeah. How's that relevant?
Not really relevant. Like, cool car, but so what?
Cool story. I guess, yeah, there's a certain... And actually, if the person goes, oh, wow, I almost don't want to talk to that person. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they go, hi, this is Sam from Seen Through Glass. He owns the Ferrari 360. Or like, he has
Yeah.
Because if
And then what if they said... Oh yeah, you're that Ferrari guy.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
How do you feel about that?
Okay, so actually I'll tell you what the more telling thing is. What happens when somebody says to you, what car do you own? What cars do
you
own?
Yeah, that's the one.
It happens a lot to me, especially people who don't know what I do for a living. Yeah, and they're
I always assume is everyone.
My wife really gets cross because people come up sometimes, very rarely, and go, hey, you're that, and I'm like, They go, I know you from somewhere. I'm like, do you? I will never say,
no.
You might recognize me from such hits as A Bird Poos on Me and Priceless Ferrari. If someone says, oh wow, so what cars do you own? I always just say, BMW X3.
That's the move.
I never, ever say the other stuff.
Does it depend on the situation though?
Very rarely. Even if I'm in like, Goodwood members meeting, like really it's very rare that I will talk about the sporty stuff. I get the opportunity to drive loads of things, but I just never feel the need to go in with, okay, if I'm in Maranello talking to a Ferrari factory test driver,
yeah.
I'm probably going to lead with the 360.
Porsche, right?
Probably going to lead with the 360. But in most non-car situations, but even in some car circles, I'm still quite hesitant to reveal what I have because I don't know. Maybe that.
It feels weird. It feels weird, especially if you're like, depending on who you're talking to. We went to a wine tasting the other day, and for some reason, we had to sit down on a table with like six other people. And I did not plan on this. I just kind of wanted to go drink some wine with my wife and have a chat and like have a break from life.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, you know, talking about what you do, blah, 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 blah. And someone was talking about some eco stuff. And then they're like, oh, you're a car person. And they're like, how many cars do you have? And you're like, this is a bad, this is not, I don't,
it's only a wrong
answer. Am I just going to lie to you? Or I'm going to tell you the right answer and you're going to be very confused. So I told them the right answer at the time. And they're just looking at you like,
yeah.
Why do you need five cars? And you're like, I don't.
There's no way to justify it. And then also, if you say that you're a car person and you're into cars and you own cars, you can get the flip, which is the other person who is into cars, but not at the level that we have to be because of our jobs.
Serious geekiness, yeah.
So, you know, for example, I walked up at our podcast studio the other day and I was in a McLaren Artura. And
nice.
Yeah, very nice. And there's a guy gets out of a van. Oh, I like this. And I immediately like, oh, it's not mine. Like I've been lent it.
Stole it.
He goes, oh, all right, that's not too bad, is it? What are you doing with it? So I just take photos. Like, you know, I don't take any photos, by the way, but it's the easier way. I'm not going to say I make a YouTube
video. You take
some
photos.
Well, I mean, on my iPhone. Anyway, so then he starts telling me that he's got an M4 and he's done a few track days at Silverstone and Brands Hatch, and there's some really good track day experiences that you can do. And I just don't want to be that guy who says, yeah, cool. Well, last time I was at Silverstone, actually, I was with Nico Hülkenberg. Like, you don't like, do you know what I mean? So I'm just like, I'm there going, oh, wow, oh, cool, yeah, I'll check. He's like, oh, do you want me to give you a card? Like, I know, and I'm like, so it's really hard, I think, to not come across. But maybe we're too
don't
British.
Don't be a dick.
I think we're
I think
too
it's just
British.
Don't be a dick. Yeah, we are. That's it. It's also.
We should just dive in with the, yeah, we've got 55 cars and we're super successful. We've got millions of followers and I've driven everything and. But you like, you. I that makes me feel sick. The thought of saying that gives me the heebie-jeebies. And I think it is. I think we're too British. I think if we were Americans, we would celebrate our successes more because they are successes. The fact that we've been able to buy these cars, own these cars, have the experiences we've had, create these businesses for ourselves, like that should be applauded, but I hide it to the maximum of my capabilities.
I had this morning. So I was at Porsche Silverstone driving a car, as you do. I mean, why else would you be there?
Sure.
Experience center. And the person, your instructor for the morning comes out and goes, hi, I'm sorry, I don't know what his name is.
Yeah.
He's a good player there. Even what's your name? And then like, you know, what do you want to do today? I don't know, drive some cars, learn something, have some fun.
Sure.
That's about it, really. I don't really care much other than that. And then they have this conundrum because you're like, in theory, let's just say you were American. Americans are very good at this. You'd go at the start of the day, right, I'm just going to give you a car driving, whatever history, which is all the information you actually need to know.
Yeah.
And then we can move on with our day and we're good. Whereas I'm like, yeah. He's like, have you been here before? I was like, yeah.
So honestly, let me ask you a question because I did this. Did you pretend at any stage that you hadn't driven a car that you had already driven or that something was new to you that you already knew about?
Okay, I do this. I didn't actually do this today, but I've done that on test drives.
Yes.
Not necessarily new, but I'll if you're stuck in a car with someone for 30 minutes or whatever, testing a car, you're like, I've got to have some chat, some conversation. And generally with, let's say, Porsches, I'll ask them about some really nerdy, whatever, feature, etc. I probably know the answer.
Sure.
But I'm going to ask them about it because it's something to talk about and they can talk.
That, so at the... It, same thing. Any of those experience centers, or you're going somewhere and they're just doing a job. And I'm sure 99% of the people they get in, they're driving these cars for the first time and they'll sit you in. I just don't want to ruin their flow.
No.
I don't want to be like, I got it, bro. Like, I don't want to be that guy who goes, watch this.
Yeah. And then just send it off the track.
Literally. So I just let them spiel. And I'm like, wow, cool. That's traction control. Wow. Amazing.
You actually did.
Genuinely, I pretend like I'm clueless. And then they're like, oh, have you driven a Porsche before? And I'm like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember it though. Okay, bye.
I don't go to that level. Because then that sort of thing, you go out and drive and they can pick up very quickly whether you have a clue.
I guess. Well, not with me.
Well, yeah. Well, there you go. They can. They can pick up very quickly whether you have a clue or not.
They're like, God, this guy is really, he'll never get a sports car.
But it was, so I was meant to be driving a GTS. Ended up driving a Carrera S.
Okay, nice.
And actually, before that, I thought, oh, I'd quite like a 992 GTS. And I've decided I don't. I'm going, I think this is partly because of the other car that's parked outside.
Sure.
But I think I'm either like, now I'm kind of like hardcore or luxe almost. Mm-hmm. Buying a base 11, 911 is not a luxe car in that sense. But for me, for my road driving, actually something like a C2S makes a lot more sense.
You know, the genuine, I think, pick of the bunch. Actually, this is a lie. But
see, this is where it gets interesting.
I drove the famous base 911, the base 911 Carrera last year.
911 drive, basic 911. You went to the Alps or something.
Well done, yes. Went to Austria, start last year. So I must have done 1,500 miles in it or 2,000 miles or something like that. Austria and back.
It's good going.
It was great going. And I had previously been a bit of a 992, hater's a really strong word, but I was like, I don't get it. It's like a Bentley. Like, is this a Porsche? Like, what? It's like too big. It's too comfortable.
What's this cup holder in the middle?
Oh, don't get me started on that. It can't be that comfortable. Like, you know, and I absolutely loved it. Like, it was just such a great experience. And my Carrera T, my old Carrera T, had a similar characteristic, which is kind of back to basics, pure, not analog at all, but you know, that just kind of simple driving pleasure thing. And at the time I said, oh, they really needed to do a manual. And I would have liked it if they'd done a couple of the options.
Yeah.
But actually maybe that's why it was so special, because it was just a sort of real box fresh 911 Carrera. The Carrera T, the new Carrera T apparently hasn't got the charm of the old one, but I literally was with the guys from the Octane collection yesterday, who took a car, Carrera T, to a big drifting day in Nürburgring and said it was amazing. So it was awesome. They absolutely loved it.
Well, all of those cars are all a selection of options,
yeah,
basically,
yeah,
that you can spec. So there's no reason. This is where I think it gets in the sort of journalistic. If you read a magazine or whatever, they'll often tell you that the base, nothing on it, is the best. I think it's the best value.
Sure.
But if you're speccing a car, for me, there's other things. Like, it's definitely the best value because you get all of the car, you get basically everything, but without paying any extras. And the extras are always very expensive. It's very easy to whack on 25 grand onto a 911, like super easy. But what extras do you put on?
I think
there's things I have to put on.
Well, but then if you're doing 911 Carrera plus options, then you should get the S. Do you know what I mean? Like, or the T. Because I think the base 911 Carrera only makes sense without anything. Like
a Bose stereo.
Okay, so this is what is fascinating, and I actually thought the sound system was good enough.
Yeah.
Because it's so sound dampened, that car, the cabin is quiet, that I never found an issue with, and I listen to a lot of music, a lot of podcasts, very happy. The bass lights, absolutely fine. Didn't need PDLS and blah blah. Sports chrono or whatever, didn't miss it. I don't think you can have it on a 911 Carrera, can you? I think
don't know.
It's just that thing where, because of price, the minute you start adding stuff and the minute you start getting close to a Carrera S, you might as well have, it's only going to be $5,000 more and financing and everything and resale value. The S is always going to hold its value more than a 911 Carrera. So, but I would have the T. I would have the T. If I was going to start putting options, I'd have the T.
And then let's say
you look at the Carrera and you go, well, I would have like a couple of things, so yeah. I might as well get the S.
Yeah.
Then you start looking at S's and you're like, well, I'm going to have rear wheel steering because you've got to have rear wheel steering.
Yeah.
And then you start looking at a few other bits and you're like, well, I should might probably just have the GTS. Like it's an incredible slippery slope.
Yeah. I think fundamentally the simple answer is, if you want the ultimate or a well-specced 911 road car, the GTS is your simple answer. If you're looking to save money or reduce some of the options, then yeah, go lower.
But I would get the GTS without the GTS suspension, personally, just for me. Now,
No, fair. So you would basically get an S specced up to a GTS, except the drop in the suspension.
Yeah, and I'd have the noise insulating windows.
Yeah. Yeah, fair. Hey, a great car. I'd have the T.
Yeah.
I'd have the T.
And the T is...
The 911 Carrera with the manual gearbox.
Has it got rear wheel steering or anything like
you
that?
Yeah, you can do all the funny bits. So it's in that video that I made a year or so ago, I complained. I was like, you should be having manuals. It's because they were waiting for the T.
So
they're just very clever, Porsche. But yeah, that's... Yeah, if I didn't have a GT3, I'd be very tempted by a T.
Let's talk about the GT3.
Oh, please.
So you last on the podcast, Feb 21. That's setting the...
Okay.
All sorts has happened since then. One of which is you've got a GT3.
Quite mad, right?
How has that journey been?
How did that come about?
Who did you talk to?
A lot of Porsche forums have been asking. How? Yeah, so I think, I don't know if I'd driven the car. I'd driven a 992 GT3 last time we did one of these. But anyway, yeah, always loved it the moment I drove it. Basically bugged my dealer from day one. Even when the car launched, I said, I'll have one. They were like, good luck. And then I drove one. I said, no, I really want one. Bugged them. They kept saying, look, unlikely. And then kind of all went a bit quiet. And I just randomly put up an Instagram story being like, I still really want one of these. And I got an email that night from the dealer principal saying, oh, I didn't realize you wanted a wing car. I thought you just wanted a touring. Like, if you want a wing car, I got a slot for you. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'll take it. and it was great. You know, like I had spec'd a car from new prior, I'd spec'd a Jaguar F-Type, but there was something different about spec'ing a Porsche, spec'ing a GT3. Like it felt like a super unique and pretty amazing experience. And I tried to really like savor it. We didn't know for certain that I was going to get a paint to sample slot, you know, that's sort of held back until a little bit later, further down the line, where they confirm that or not. But yeah, got a call saying, yeah, we can give you a paint to sample slot if you want it. But if you do, you need to lock in the spec next week. So went through that.
A rush on that one.
Yeah, a bit of a rush, but I kind of half knew what I was going to do. They said that you might get one. So therefore it's worth considering. So we went back and forth a couple of times, but no, pretty much locked that in. And then the car actually came a lot earlier than it was expected. It was not supposed to be here till kind of about now, March, April time. And it got brought forward. A couple of delays right at the end. By the way, arrived in the UK in December, and I actually collected it early January. I was just a bit mad. I still sort of half pinch myself that it's mine. I broke it in. I drove it back down to Austria, the same trip I did in the 911 Carrera, to sort of break it in. And that was at the end of January, and I haven't actually touched it since. So it's been really weird. The last 10 days I've started to drive it again because I just haven't been around. And I'm about to set off literally tomorrow morning. I set off on a whole load of adventures in it. So I think, it'll get 2,000-3,000 more miles on it very quickly, which I'm excited to do because I feel like I haven't bonded with it yet.
Like you need a good road trip.
Yeah, I know what it's about. I enjoy it a lot. I love the idea of it. I love the way it looks. I love everything, but I haven't got that like firm bond yet, which will come with miles and time. So I'm just excited to get back out in it and see it in the sunlight. I actually haven't seen it in the sunshine yet
because
this country is a dump. So that I'm excited to see.
So was doing the same trip.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go down to one of the ice driving events?
It was theoretically GP Ice Race, which is a Porsche affiliated event, but not a Porsche event that hasn't been able to happen for 3 years now for various reasons.
No snow.
This year was no snow. The year before, 2 years before, were COVID. So this year got cancelled super last minute, but weirdly Porsche were doing the 911 Dakar drives at the same place. They sent me an email saying, well, if you're still going, you can drive the Dakar. I was like, I'll still go. So literally the exact same trip, which is kind of interesting, but less snow. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the differences or the GT3 is quite a horrible motorway cruiser. I'd underestimated that because obviously in the UK, we're sitting most motorways like 65, 70 because traffic is everywhere. So that's like 3,000, just under 3,000 RPM on a GT 992 GT3. Whilst in Europe, okay, fine, in France, I thought you were like 80 odd. And then I went through a whole load of Autobahn stretches. My God, I'm it's like, take a breather, car.
Is your car manual or PDK?
Manual, yeah, manual. I prefer the looks of the winged 992. I actually think the touring 992 is a touch too aggressive. It's not as pretty as I think the old shape was, but I spec'd it like a touring. So it's got the comfy seats. It's got the manual gearbox, no roll cage. I've got Turbo S P0 tires on there, like not even Coursers, nothing. So yeah, it's a very comfy road spec.
Nice.
Theoretically. It is nice, but it may be a bit weird taking a car that's really designed for the track. And
it's not. It's designed as a road car first, track car second. Thank RS you. Is track car first, road second.
I appreciate you saying that. Hopefully a lot of people online will.
So what?
No, because I honestly, comment section is the last thing ever on my mind. But it's interesting to see a lot of people who say, like, what a weird spec for a GT3. Like,
I think it's quite normal.
You should have just got a touring. And I'm like, well
I couldn't.
And also, this is the exact same car. It just has a wing on the back.
Yeah. So if I took the wing off, it would be a touring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I've suggested various times on the internet or whatever that I might. Things I've considered with my RS is getting rid of the cage. And I've always wanted to have one folding bucket seat, which would make using the backspace so much easier. Yeah. And like to miss out on having the harnesses, because it's the only real reason why a cage, other than okay, it stiffens the car. I've not driven one with and without a cage. To tell whether you really, I'm sure you can notice.
992, you can definitely notice. I drove them back to back, a caged car and a non-caged car.
That's quite interesting.
Mm. I actually freaked myself out because Porsche lent me a fully wing, cage, cup two, like everything. And I drove it for a few days and I was like, oh my God, I don't want this car. Like this is, my wife was like, what have you bought? Like she was fuming. The dog wouldn't sit in it, freaked out by all the noises. And I was like, this is just too much. And then to be fair, I drove a touring. But as we know, it's an identical car and was immediately like, thank God, manual touring. So it was a PDK car, cage, cup twos. And then I drove a touring manual P0 courses. And I was like, why is this so much softer? Like, why is this so much more supple? Like what is going on?
Tires
was a big, big factor. Sidewalls apparently a little bit softer.
I think it's a huge factor.
Yeah. So that piston heads did a whole piece on it as well. And then Porsche said the cage really does make a difference on a UK road, on a bumpy. I think you would notice the difference.
I just love to have the space. Everyone's like, why would you do that?
It's an RS. You need the rigidity.
Maybe I'll take the wing off as well.
People have done that a lot with 992s. Lots of people taking off the wing.
It's a two-minute job.
It's a two-minute job, but supposedly it does make the car feel fairly unstable.
I can imagine. Yeah, like not at normal speed though.
No, sort of over 60 odd. When does the active rear spoiler activate on a 992 Carrera S, for example, or a Touring? It's like 70.
Yeah, it's about 70
or something. I was saying. They say that at those kind of speeds, it's like when you go past a truck on a windy day, you just stall a bit. I have a friend, I know a guy in Canada who did it, and he was like, "Nah, put it straight back on." So it's just not nice.
Yeah, and when you if you go on the Autobahn or something, you really notice the wing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you haven't done it without the wing, but you really notice with a car that's got a big wing like that, how stable it is relative to a car that does not have that sort of...
Hunkers sort of you down.
...thing on the back. I think last time I saw you, I think you still had your 996.
Oh, yeah, probably. For sure. That was a short-lived... I wouldn't say it was a love affair, actually. I still love the 996. Like, I would have a 996 in a heartbeat. I actually think it's weirdly one of my favorite generations to look at. I obsess over 996s.
Interesting.
I want a Turbo S. I want a GT3. I want a GT3 RS. Like, I want them all. Like, I love the 996. And the 40th was probably kind of like one of the best, for me, shapes, like the GT Silver, like everything about it. But truth be told, it wasn't a dog, but that car did need a lot more work than I realized. And there was, even when we did everything. I sent up to Vysak UK and just did everything. It was still giving me issues. And that was quite hard to accept. And if I'm honest, it was a bit too nice on the road. I wanted it to be a tad more edgy. I wasn't using it enough. Yeah. You know, it was an occasion car and it didn't quite reward enough. So if I was using it every day, I probably would have loved it. But I was taking it out for the odd weekend, the odd sunny drive, and I was like, come on.
Yeah, that's when you edge towards the RS or exactly. GT3, et cetera. But so have you been mooching around town on your GT3?
Literally last 10 days or so. But because I'm heading out on these trips, I just wanted to do some stuff. So I've done some filming with it anyway. And it's really been the first chance. Like, honestly, February and March, I basically haven't been here. like my life this year has just turned out to be insane. And having the chance to just go for a poodle in the GT3 hasn't really presented itself. So yeah, I've been out and about on it. I did some filming the other day with Paul Wallace, Supercars London. It's a much better road car than people make out. Everyone slags off the 992. It's too far. I disagree.
It's all relative and like where your head is on that day.
Yeah, and if you've just jumped out of a 991, fine, maybe. But it's a GT3. Like, I've honestly, apart from that crazy cupped PDK whatever car that I drove from Porsche UK, I've really never got into a 992 GT3 and gone, this is too much. And I'm old. I'm old. I love a Bentley. So I would say if it was, I've never had that moment yet. But, you know, different horses for different courses.
Yeah. Depends where you're driving and whatever and blah, 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 blah. But I was thinking about this today. So I drove up in my E-Class and that has slightly an annoying amount of tyre roar. But I think I've kind of got it in my head that actually it should just be silent. Dead silent. Silent that no car is. I think it should be that quiet.
Yeah.
Like
Would you have a new Range Rover yet?
Yeah, I went in a new Range Rover.
It's quiet.
I didn't think it was that quiet.
It's not silent though. Or their like noise cancelling thing. You're like, could cancel a bit more noise.
That's it. It's like, what do you start referencing against?
You know what's really quiet? The Mercedes EQS. That's quiet.
Do you want to know what's really quiet?
Go on.
If you've got some Apple AirPods Pro, two, the new ones.
Okay.
Put those
no
in.
Need to show off.
And then, I know.
This is sounding at AirPods 2s Pro.
If you put the noise cancelling on,
yeah,
that is actually silent.
Yeah, fair.
Which is possibly a little too silent.
Mm.
But I did that in my RS the other day and I was like, I think I'm in an S-Class.
Hello. Fair play. Well, I'll try that out.
So where have you been? You said you've been away.
Yeah, I went everywhere, mate. It's been incredible. Let me think. You did the Austria trip, went to Patagonia with Porsche, which was a great trip.
Did you go to drive some e-fuels?
Did some e-fuels bits. I went to Italy a couple of times. Where else have I been? I have to look at my Instagram. Do you know, I just forget. But I've been everywhere. I've been everywhere. And then when I've been here, I've been changing nappies. So between the two, I just haven't had a lot of time. But yeah, my wife is very understanding. Where did I go between? I did something. Then I went to Chile and then I did something else. Anyway.
Where's your stance on EVs? There's no trick question here. E-fuels and sort of where transport might be in 10 years' time.
I actually find it a super exciting time because I don't think there is one solution. I think there's going to be various different options or routes to go. I think pure or BEVs, battery electric vehicles, will make a lot of sense in city centres, in developed countries. I think hydrogen is going to make a lot of sense in tractors, lorries, buses. Yeah. I think synthetic or E is going to make a lot of sense in motorsport and historic vehicles.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Of course, I think there's so many different routes to look at. The thing that excites me a lot about E or synthetic is, yes, of course, as an enthusiast, it's a chance to keep a lot of historic vehicles on the road and keep that, preserve that history, but also an option for parts of the world that firstly are so like light years behind us in terms of EV infrastructure or EV adoption, but also from a cost point of view, it's just almost unfathomable for these places or people to think about changing in their 400 pound Toyota Hilux that they've been running for 16 years as an essential vehicle to get them around to suddenly going, right, I'm now going to switch to an electric MG and charge it up. You know, that's so unrealistic, where I think if synthetic or e-fuels can be focused in those parts of the world, those countries where they rely on a combustion engine, that makes sense. Because the biggest problem with E or synthetic fuels is the scalability.
And then it's going to be price.
And price. But with all of these things, just like down, BEVs and hydrogen, like it will come down the more it's, you know, scaled up. But it's probably impossible for synthetics to fuel every single combustion engine vehicle in the world.
It's definitely impossible.
It's impossible. And so that's where the switch has to continue. That like the BEV stuff has to keep developing. And now they're talking about solid state batteries and I get confused. Is it lithium ion and then is it sodium ion that they're pushing now? Anyway, so like as the battery technology develops,
cathodes and anodes into a different substance. Whatever. There's
a lot going on. Hydrogen combustion's coming to the forefront now with Toyota, I think, and obviously JCB are obviously doing a lot in that department too. So as we in the developed countries start switching towards new transport means or new technologies, I think let's use synthetic and e-fuels for parts of the world that are very far behind us, but we still could help to reduce emissions. That's kind of where I'm at. And then also for us nerds that want to go racing.
But awesome. I think it's an interesting one, because when you look at, let's say, I think we're going to have two problems in the UK if you're trying to keep running a combustion vehicle. But let's say you own a very cheap combustion car. You've paid £400 or whatever for it. You actually still spend quite a lot on fuel over the year. So over 5 years, you spend an awful lot on fuel. So if there are cheap EVs, of which we're starting to get like an early Leaf and stuff like that, which don't have much range, might have like 80 miles or something, but I think they're like a couple of grand.
10 or 12.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you could get down to like 5.
I think the really depleted ones are probably at 5 or 6, but the problem is charging capabilities, battery longevity, all that stuff. Their battery life is at like 40, 45%. So what does it mean to you as a vehicle that you're going to try and use, and charging times, charging cost? And also, you say the fuel thing. There's a lot of people that, I don't know the demographics of the UK well enough, but let's pretend you're in deepest, darkest Scotland. You might have a Defender or a 400-pound Volvo that you literally do 5 to 10 miles in a week. And so maybe actually you're only filling up your 60 or 70 quid, these days 80 or 90 quid once a month maybe. Whereas to then switch to an electric vehicle, yes, you could go and buy.
That makes no sense. It makes no sense for that person
to switch.
To switch. You're just not doing the mileage. Yeah. It's a bit like, I think with these classic car conversions, when someone's spending 100 grand taking an old Mini, putting a very high voltage high amp battery powertrain in it and then driving around in it, you're like, this car, you were never going to drive it that much. You're doing actually more damage than good by doing this swap to some, on some levels.
On okay, some
from
levels,
a yeah. pollution point of view, it's better. I applaud, I think it's cool for people to explore all these sorts of things. I think what we will have a problem with as more and more people switch to BEVs, which will happen. Like there's no,
for sure,
no doubt. That's
for sure.
That's just going to happen. They're going to get cheaper, whatever. It's going to be the for majority transport. What happens to petrol stations?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
and fuel prices accordingly.
And money in general, you know, the government aren't going to sit back and watch themselves lose that kind of money from fuel sales. Charging publicly is already getting more and more expensive. And as the demand for electricity as a household increases, we're already in a cost of living crisis because of energy prices. So what's going to happen when there's an even higher demand because everyone's also trying to charge their electric vehicles? Because at where I live, when I had that Mercedes EQS, the chargers at our house aren't working. So I had to go down the road to an Esso garage, and I can't remember the brand of charging, but it's a super fast 150, whatever. Plugged it in, and to charge the EQS cost me 56 quid.
Yeah.
Which at that point I'm like, well, from a cost point of view, I might as well just be running a combustion engine vehicle. I was going to do longer miles, blah, blah, blah. So the cost is definitely the biggest thing, but China already like miles ahead of us on here. They've got electric vehicles for £4,000 equivalent, and obviously NIO doing the battery swap technology as well. So like there's so much advancement to come. Like we're really still at such an early stage of BEV. So I'm with you there where it's going to get better and better and easier and all of that stuff. But what happens to the existing infrastructure? What happens to the existing vehicles? What happens to, well, old BEVs? I know you say that it's affordable to get into a heavily used.
Do you want to buy one?
Yes.
It's a different question. Well,
who buys?
We sort of look at, I think you probably have to separate it into different areas of the market, who's buying, you know.
Because I don't think many people are buying used EVs full stop.
I think at the moment, not a lot are because, well, personally, I had an E208 that's just gone back on a lease. So, and I would like to have another small EV. But I'm looking at the market and going, there's a lot of cars. And there's a lot of cars that have come off fleets. There's a lot of cars that have come off leases. People who have bought through a business. There's this whole part of the market. Like all the incentives are around if you own a business or if you've got a company car. If you're a private buyer, there's no incentives.
Yeah.
So I don't know who, and you can't get none of those stuff. It's all first time new cars. So none of those people are going to buy a secondhand EV. So who's going to buy all these EVs? The prices are just going to have to take a hit.
And that's what I hear from every single dealer I speak to, is that they are horrible news now. Used EVs, you cannot sell them and they just lose money hand over fist. Anyone that I speak to, at least in the prestige, car dealing world, just will try not to touch an EV with a barge pole because there's such bad news on the used market. Because you're right, all the incentives are buy new. And also, the technology moves forward so quickly. That's the other problem. You know, if you're looking at a 10-year-old Nissan Leaf or a 5-year-old whatever.
We're talking about like a 2-year-old Taycan.
Yeah, that as well. I mean, but across the board, everything moves forward. Because if you think about it, Taycans now actually are one of the worst performing in terms of range, charge, all that stuff like that. Okay, that's a great looking car. It's a great brand. It's a great performing car. It's one of the ones I would have, but not as an actual usable long distance EV, which is what I need.
It's not bad though.
Yeah, but it's 200 odd miles.
Yeah, and I know for my driving, if I can get in winter 200 miles, that is more.
That's plenty.
More than enough.
Fair.
And if I could get a Taycan for 50k, 45k, that's a great purchase.
What does that do for Porsche though? Do Porsche want Taycans at 45, 50k?
What are they going to do about it?
I don't know, but you know Ferrari wouldn't let that happen.
Cayennes, Macans, whatever, they get that though.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, you know, you're right.
So I think the prices will come down. They will drop over this year an amount, probably possibly a reasonable amount. there's been some savage figures from like January 10%.
Yeah,
January
10%
on like BMW iXs because they look like, yeah, an interesting design.
Great car though, I have to say.
I hear it's really
good.
It's
a great car. It's like a really, really good car.
Like it looks bad, but yeah. I hear it's a really good car.
Yeah, really good car, really good car.
But the secondhand purchase, you're going, it's a great car, but people want quite a lot for it.
It's a really tricky one and a fascinating one, and that's why I'm excited, because there's so much ahead of us, there's so much change, and I actually think it's, as a petrolhead, which is a weird way to call us now because less and less petrol cars, but as a car enthusiast, there's so much choice. Like if you're trying to get a new car, petrol, hybrid, diesel still exists, BEVs, the potential of synthetic fuels coming to save the day, and you can go buy a vintage or a classic, hydrogen combustion, hydrogen EV. Like there's so many options that it makes the choice of another car like tantalizing, and you're like, well, what do I do? Where do I go? Whereas before, you're like, I've just got another 3 Series. You know, like, yeah. So yeah. From that
still
point
good.
Of view, still great.
Best mid-size family car.
Did you get the 340i or the D?
I had a 340i.
340i. And did you have the one with the long screen, like the big screen?
No, it was pre-facelift or whatever.
Okay. I'll talk to you about that afterwards. It's very nerdy.
What do you have at the moment? As your
X3
daily?
M40D is the wife's car, the family car. And then I've got the F-Type is my daily, but that's on the way out. Because my resolution was I want a four-door, four-seat something, maybe not four door, but at least four seat something, so that as baby gets older, I can go to Goodwood and we can all go together, yeah. Or we can go to the south of France and I can make videos. We have to get two cars. I don't see any point in replacing the X3 with something juicy.
Pause for a second.
Yeah.
Have you traveled with your child yet?
Yes.
Do you see yourself traveling with the amount of stuff that you take in like a 911?
No. Obviously, what I meant was the shorter day trips. Because yeah, obviously, if we're going to have to do if we're going to do weekends away, we need the SUV. But I half contemplated swapping the X3 for an M3 Touring or something like juicy. But the problem is, my wife doesn't want to drive anything like that. We had an RS6 for a while, and she was like, "I don't get it." And anyway, so she's best off in a little SUV.
Then she likes
likes to be high up. She likes to be high up. Yeah,
couldn't just put the seat up.
Yeah, she tried. An RS6 is a big, but anyway, long story short, if I get something juicy for like that car, I'm going to want to drive that. If I had an M3 Touring, that's the car that I'm going to want to jump in and drive. And then what's she going to drive? She's going to be left stranded. Yeah. So there needs to be the quite boring but very effective family car, of which that X3 we adore, although it's not as spacious as you would hope or think. And then I want to replace the F-Type with something, just a bit more. Yeah, this got four seats, got four proper seats. That you know.
What is that going to be?
I know, but I don't want to say.
Okay. I went through, my kid is now 15 months old, and I went through a mad year. Just having a kid.
I was going to say. So you have to say
in car stuff as well, of trying to go, right, what's the perfect solution that I can go away for? Initially, you're like, oh, I'll go away for a weekend. And then you're like, nah, we're just going to take the big car.
That's, you need so much space.
Also, with a small kid, you can't drive very fast.
No.
And I generally don't drive very fast with someone else in the car anyway, but you genuinely cannot accelerate or brake fast. So there's pretty much no point other than like it looks cool. So then you need to get all your stuff in. So when I had the Lusso, I was like, oh, this is dreamy. Great. And then I kind of ran into the you're the Ferrari person type thing. And I wasn't using it.
Sure.
So I was like, okay, no. And then I got the GTS that that's going at the moment. He was too small to go in it at the moment. Because you can't go in the back until like what seat fits. That's the sort of,
because you have to have rear facing for so long and
boring parenting stuff. Yeah. So he went in that car once and that's gone, and now I'm just like, well, we just take the E-Class everywhere.
No, it that's why I said four doors, because realistically you're looking at the best option is Far Saloon. Yeah. Is realistic, because if you really try the Bentley Continental GT or Lusso or like, actually, until they are 4 or 5 years old, it's super unrealistic. Because you said the paraphernalia as well.
Yeah.
By the time you got, but fast saloon, proper boot, proper rear seats, proper space, and sometimes ability to put roof rack on as well. That's realistically the only route I think to go, unless you look at Tourings.
So you've got an M3 Touring. That's
no, we've already discounted that. But
the one that interests me a lot, I'd be interested to know, have you driven M5 CS?
Oh no, not CS. I only hear great things, and I'm sure it's spectacular. I love M5 Competition is one of my favorite all time cars.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely adore it. M5 Competition, I think, is genius car. Genius car.
I thought it was too stiff.
No. Well, you heard what I said about GT3, so maybe I'm the wrong person to ask.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Then it's
CS is only going to be stiffer, mate.
No, the CS is more compliant than the Competition, I hear.
No.
Yeah.
How come?
Well, because they've changed the suspension.
No. But they wouldn't have made it more... They wouldn't have made it any softer. It's a CS.
No, I think it rides better. That doesn't mean it's got less body control and stuff. It just handles. I think it just handles everything better.
Yeah,
but it has got those monstrous seats in it, which are quite cool, but they are slightly annoying.
Slightly annoying. Yeah, but that kind of thing is, I think, actually the route that you end up having to go.
And lots of people do. If you actually look out in the world at what people buy, you get a lot of people like myself that end up with a big wagon, a stupid wagon.
Sure.
Which is great and also stupid. And then you're driving down the motorway and you're like,
what am I doing?
Why am I getting 25 MPG everywhere? Is that a really good idea? But then you put your foot down occasionally and you're like, oh, that's quite fun.
It's quite cool. But I think we all would love the idea of like DB11. Yeah, if we DBS or, you know, like 911.
No kids sitting in the back of that.
It's just, unless you're in it, it's unrealistic. And I think there's great content. And there's great ideas around what is the most extreme dad car or family car, sports car that we could get. And yeah, you can make it work, but it's just not comfortable. And at that point, you're giving up so much just to say, oh, well, I've got a V12. Fast saloon. There's a couple of like really out there bits if you look hard. And again, I don't want to reveal too many of my cards because this is a series coming soon to youtube.com/seethroughglass.
Dad four-door.
There we go. Coming to you in September 23.
One that would probably resonate with you.
That's the obvious one.
It's an interesting space and there's lots of stuff in it. And the annoying thing is I generally, like this morning going to Silverstone, GT3 is parked on the drive and the E-Class is there. I take the E-Class.
We're old, mate.
I am old.
Yeah, that's, we're old.
In my head, I'm old.
Yeah. Long past those days of going, yeah, cool, let's take the Radical to Silverstone.
Just down the M1.
Yeah, so easy. You know, but that's fine. I'm all right with that. I did those journeys. I don't need to do them again. I drove the 4C like 3,000 miles around Europe. It was great. I loved it, but I'm not looking to do it again.
And if you said to me, you can go drive around Europe in a car, I would take the GT3.
With the family.
Yeah, obviously not with
exactly.
Family.
So that of course, if you're going
to take I think I'd be like, I want a camper van or something if I was going with family.
You? Yeah, I would like. Yeah, fair. I'd like a. I don't know what I'd like. I'd like a Bentayga. I just want a waft.
Yeah, you just want a waft.
Just want a waft, like, and just look cool. I'm not fussed about going fast with all the stuff in the car and the kit. So I'm about to move, in inverted commas, such a YouTube thing, to Monaco for about 3 or 4 weeks, which we'll look at like 8 weeks online. And we're taking a Range Rover Sport, a new Range Rover Sport.
Oh, nice.
Because I think it looks the bomb. It's super nice, super comfortable. Yeah. And like, great. Like just cruise, just chill. And that for me is the route to go rather than, I want to go and attack a Col de Torino and I'm not going to do it.
And like, if you are doing a task that involves practical stuff, having a practical tool, and if it looks nice and does all the stuff and is nice inside, which those are, like, happy days.
Why
bust your balls? Like,
it's like when Lewis Hamilton went on Top Gear all those years ago, and Clarkson was like, "What do you drive?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, like a GLS 400D or something like that." You know, because he's like, "I'm a Formula One driver." I'm like, "What?
I just want to cruise. I just want to waft.
Yeah, not like, proving anything.
Not like, proving anything. Like, I go fast enough at the weekend. So yeah. I think we're super, super spoiled that we've got the keys to fast stuff. So when we're not doing the let's go for a fast drive or road trip or whatever, let's just cruise. I don't need to be in the, yeah, radical every day of the week. I just don't.
So you're not showcasing to everyone that you are a performance driver all the time.
No, because I'm not.
Not got your driving shoes on.
I'm not a performance driver. I'm useless. Nothing performance about me.
Pure sangue.
Yes. Puro sangue.
Did you drive that?
I did drive that.
What was they like?
I've sort of said a few different things on this. My mind keeps changing about it. Really, 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 really good. Really good, but not an SUV in the sense of its performance. I felt more like it was a fast estate. Okay, it is an SUV. Like, I keep fighting people on this. I will bow down and say, okay, fine, it's an SUV. But in the way it performs, handles, and feels, it's like a fast estate. It feels much more planted, much closer to the ground, far less lean. It's so accomplished. But having said that, it's one of the very few Ferraris that until I was driving the nuts off it, I found a tiny bit boring.
Yeah.
You know, there's a famous thing about Ferraris that you can get in them and even at 20 miles an hour, they give you the fizz, they give you the buzz, like something
depends
exciting. Maybe, but I think in general, you sit in a Ferrari, even statically in a showroom, and yeah, it's like, Ferrari. This was one of the very few that they just don't seem to have quite given that, but their explanation is that's on purpose. You know, this is supposed to be elegant, refined. They've purposefully made it quite quiet, like all of these different elements. But for me, yeah, I was a bit underwhelmed until I got onto a twisty road, turned it up to 10, and I was like, holy bejesus, like this is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I at no point ever could I consider, applaud, fathom 450,000 pounds on. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
With that, you kind of have to go, it is what it is. It's a bit like when I talk to some of these people making various resto mods and whatever, and they have a number, and I believe them. Like, it is, it's not like they're lying. It costs a lot to do this stuff, and they have a huge price, and you just go, yeah, like that is what it is. And like, someone's going to pay it or they're not going to pay it. And in the case of the Pura Sangue, they're paying it and it's basically sold out.
Oh, it's Ferrari. Like, they can do whatever they like type thing. The difference for me is if I won the Euro Millions, I had 150 million deposited in my bank tomorrow, I would buy a Bugatti Chiron without even questioning it. Like, without even thinking. I'd spec it to the nines. I'd pay 3.5 mil. I'd be like, yeah, sure, it's a Chiron. Even with that 150 million in the bank, I couldn't spend nearly £500,000 on a Pura Sangue, because it's not a £500,000 car.
Yeah,
because it's an evolution of a Lusso. Yeah, it's an
like
evolution.
A Lusso all road.
Literally that, and therefore I can't stomach that kind of money. Like, I'd have a 599 GTO and then an X3. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I just,
or a Lusso
and
much more cash.
Yes, and an Alpina X7 or something. You know, like, that's the problem. If it was 250 plus options, I'd kind of be like, wow, cool, man. But the price just is that sting in the tail where I'm like, well, realistically, why? You know, what? Like, why? Because you can drive it unbelievably fast, but would you ever? Because it's a four-seater, so you're probably going to have the kid in.
Okay. So let's bring this back to, you had an RS6 for a bit.
Yes.
What did having an RS6 live up to the, I want an RS6 in your head?
No, not at all. So I had it for about 5 months.
How quickly did you come to that conclusion?
Before I'd even driven it. I got an offer for that car before I had unveiled it on YouTube, and I very nearly accepted it. As in, I'd had the car a week, I think, and I went.
How did someone know you had it?
Because it was a unique spec. It was a green and tan car that a lot of people were bidding on.
Okay.
And the dealership told people it sold. And a few people had just somehow worked it out.
That was a nice spec.
It was a very nice spec. I couldn't stop looking at that car. Unbelievable to look at. Did absolutely nothing for me. I think because of what we just were talking about a second ago, I am so spoiled, dude. I get to drive the most unbelievable cars. Over and above that, I have cars that I adore. I have the 360. Okay, now I have the GT3, but I had an F-Type at the time. Like, I had spicy stuff. I didn't need my daily to be spicy. And then on top of that, actually, it's heavy, it's big, it's not as exhilarating as one might think or suggest. Okay, fine, you get on the motorway and you're joining from a roundabout, you can give it large.
Yeah.
Great, but the rest of the time, you're just burbling around. And I was just like, and I'll be honest, the main thing was it was just losing money hand over fist. And I was watching that and I was like, I got to get this a sinking ship. Because I paid all the money for it because it was green and tan. So I was like, yeah, take all my cash or take the bank's cash and I'll pay them back. If it wasn't losing money hand over fist, would I have kept it longer? Yeah, probably. Because I did like it. I did really like it, but it was just pointless. I didn't need it.
Yeah.
I did not need an RS6. But at that time when I bought it, I was trying to change my life. I was like, spend the most money on the car that I use the most.
Yeah.
Like what? Like that should be the car that I'm driving every day should be the really nice thing.
It's an interesting conundrum that.
And then don't worry about the, because I borrow stuff all the time, but then I had this really nice daily and I was like, this is ridiculous. I don't need it. And I'm scared about where I park it and I don't want to curve the wheels and I'm worried that someone's going to nick it and it's way too ostentatious. So I was like, right, get rid of this, have nice stuff at the weekend that I can hide away and drive around in an incognito X3.
Yeah. I think one of the cars, like if I was to drive around town, I occasionally, if I'm going to meet someone or whatever, I might take a nice car. But the rest of the time, I'm in my E208, which is now gone. And like, I love it because I just park it up and I walk away. And I'm not worried about it. And like, it doesn't make any noise.
We live in a major city. Like, you genuinely have to think about crime. Like, it's an actual thing. And if you're parking up anywhere in a super, super nice car and a super flashy car, there's a genuine thought that, okay, yes, it could get nicked, but it could get keyed. A window could get smashed. Like a million things. And also people drive like idiots in this city. Like I've had the 4C reversed into by a delivery van. I've had my Abarth rear window smashed into. I've had a wing mirror nicked from the X3. Like we live in a major city. Like it's unrealistic to just be like, yeah, cool. I'll just leave my 488 slammed on the side
on the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My 177 parked on the street.
People do that. Go to Knightsbridge.
That square in London.
Yeah. Absolutely.
We are actually running out of time.
I know. I was just rudely checking my phone. But
I know. That's why I was on my phone. Because I was like, when did we say we had to end this? I agree. And I feel very similar about my E63. Like the more I drive it now, I really like it.
Yeah.
But there's a huge part of me that's like, what is the point?
Could you be as happy in an E400D? Probably not.
Most of the time. And I think the ride, it would be quieter, so they would tick that box, and the ride quality would be better. And like, it would just cost less money.
It just wouldn't give you the same.
It wouldn't have the same.
Yeah. No. That was my summary on M3 Touring. My summer, like, I would save the 30 grand and get the M340i, but it would never give me the same pizzazz.
No.
Never. And that's the problem. That's, you know.
And that's this annoying bit between it's got most of the stuff. So my M340i Touring was really good. I wanted a bigger car. Mm. So that was, you can't change that fact about it. But it was just a really bloody good car, but it was not an M3. And you drive an M3 and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is an M3. And there's a lot about this that is more fun to drive, but also that make it worse as a daily driver. So like, I keep coming back to like, my daily just needs to be chilled and easy and I need to not care about it too much.
But just look good. Very, look good. Like,
and look nice.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the X3, it's so dull as dishwater and everywhere, but the spec I'm really happy with, and every time I get in that car, I go, God, I love this thing. It's just so good. It's so nondescript, but it's just brilliant. It does everything I ask of it. And I'm like, it's brilliant. I'll have these forever. Like, I'm just like, okay, it needs more space, but it is brilliant. And I'm much happier in that situation than I was with the RS6. 1,000,000%.
And then if you're like, I've got to get in, whatever, drive 10 hours somewhere to go drive something cool, I'm not going to spend like £200-300 on fuel. Like, just for the sake of it, you know, just for fun, sitting on a motorway.
I do take the F-Type most of the time, so that is about 9 mpg. But as that's going. So
right, let's start to wrap this up.
Sure.
You're going to have to come up with like 1 second answers for some of these.
Go.
End of the F-Type.
Yes.
It's a shame, isn't it?
Disaster. Awful.
I really want... Which F-Type do you have at the moment?
The newest, the last one, the last hurrah, not
which
the 75.
Which version?
The R, the 575 all-wheel drive coupe.
I went and test drove the sort of like base V8.
The P450, the rear-wheel drive one.
The rear-wheel drive?
Yeah, sweet spot.
I drove that and was like, that is what I would have. And like, I still, in the back of my mind, want one.
Two things. Tune, easiest tune in the world. You get it up to 550, like if you need it, and pull out the active exhaust fuse. You've got the old F-Type sound. Done. Amazing car. I actually don't want to sell it. I just need to sell it. Do you know what I mean? I've got 3 2-seater sports cars. Yeah. I've owned F-Types now for 15 years. I've got a GT3 and a 360. I can always get another F-Type further down the line. Anyway, so, but I genuinely love it, and I've put 10,000 miles on it in less than a year, and they're amazing. They're amazing cars.
Really nice. They're just really nice.
So nice, mate. So nice.
Right. If you can only drive one car for the rest of your life and you've got £1,000 on something else, you don't have to necessarily say what that is. So you've got, you could have a super cheap practical family car.
Well, I will stay true to myself and my audience, Ferrari 360 Challenge Stradale.
Done.
Done.
Manual conversion?
I don't, nah, F1 box.
Fair play. But most undervalued car at the moment.
Undervalued?
Nothing.
Jaguar XE Project 8.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. What do they cost?
People ask around 110, 115. True value's around 90. And there are some that trade at that. But
I think that's a cool car.
I think that will creep back up towards 170, 180 kind of list price-ish, I think. Anyway.
There aren't that many, are there?
No, they made less than they claimed as well.
Most interesting car to you at the moment?
Some of the electric stuff. I love that Hyundai Ioniq 6, the really slopey looking one. Super keen. Cool thing.
I'm really enjoying cars from those brands.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all over the Hyundai stuff. And then, let's go with that for now.
5-car garage. Oh, unlimited value.
250 short wheelbase, Challenge Stradale. Because we're trying to be quick here. McLaren P1.
Not one that's been flooded.
Bentley Bentayga, not ones that've been flooded. Bentley Bentayga, and I'm trying to work out which Porsche. Let's just go because we're weird. 996 GT3 RS. Just because I'm feeling fruity.
They have got expensive.
It was so stupidly, like
in like a year,
unnecessarily.
I think people are just making it up.
Yeah, it's a joke. Because I've been talking about it. Let's rip him off.
Because that was one of the ones I was like.
Yeah, it's a cool
car. I think
car.
That's a good buy.
Yeah, yeah. And I like the first off.
20 or whatever. Yeah. I was like, I think that's... Yeah,
I love the first raw, off cool. of anything. It's a big reason why I like Stradale. So and that's the first 3 hour. Like, so yeah, that weird... I would review that 5 cars, but let's just go with it.
Yeah, sweet. Well, thanks very much.
Oh, that's it. Okay, cool. I could have taken more time, but anyway.
We've
got to cut off. No, thank you very much.
Place to go, people to see, whatever. But yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me back.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.